Yeah, yeah, old school. That's what I'm talking about. Listen, this ain't for everybody. Some of y'all need to hear this. I know you're in the trenches fighting, but check it out. I'm gonna put it down like this so I can help the saints understand. Everything you're going through is all part of the master plan. Or what? You thought because you got saved, everything was going to be peaches and cream? You better wake up, son. Don't nothing come to a sleeper but a dream. Faith without works is dead. Read your Bible. You know what it said. He who don't work, don't eat. Slackers don't get fed. Huh? Yeah. Jesus said, he who puts his hands to the plow looks back the same ain't fit. Some of y'all ain't been in the trenches 5 minutes and you're about ready to quit. I ain't mad at ya. I'm just hitting you with the real. If you died for me, I was still tripping. Now how you think that make you feel? Check this out. Deep game. This here's deep, huh? Some of y'all ain't saw nothing but your study trying to reach, huh? But unto him who's able to possess your fathers by his glory. Struggles might be part of your testimony, but it ain't the end of the story. Now the point is since it's prophesied way back in the day. Choir, sing your hook right here and see if the church can relate.
I know we can make it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, everyone. This is Lamont Patterson, your host of Can a Player Play. Thanks for joining us today. I'd like to start the show off with my good friend, Praise Master G, giving it up to Big Boy upstairs. It's my belief that, without him, we wouldn't have another day. At least that's my belief anyway. And hope everyone's doing well. And again, thank you for joining us today. Today we got a very, very interesting show, a very deep show, and I think it's a show that everyone can relate to and hopefully take away something positive. And I know it affects everybody in this country because I don't even really know what I'll say about this country. But anyway, I guess today is Mr. Mitchell Froshan. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Let me see if he's with us. Mitchell, are you
with us? I am with you. I am with you.
Oh, thank you so very much for joining us today, sir.
Pleasure to be here, sir.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a little brief introduction on what I can say, and I understand there are some privacy and security matters that we must take into consideration, and I definitely respect that because I don't want nobody throwing eggs at me either. Anyway, our guest is a law professor who's taught for over 25 years. He's a former assistant district attorney. Because his writing ideas are very unpopular, he chooses to use a pseudonym for obvious reasons. And, of course, he declined to say more than that because of safety issues with his family, and I definitely can understand and relate to that. And again, sir, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So normally, can I call you Mitchell?
You sure can.
Okay. Normally, Mitchell, I like to start the show off with allowing our guests to really give some a background about who they are and how they come to doing what they're doing today. So I guess I'm going to open up the floor, man, and give it to you and just let you start us off and share what where you want to share with us, and I'm dying to ask you some questions about our wonderful president, but I'll wait.
Okay. Well, I've written a book called Dying to Save America, and I've done this because of the difficulty getting any health care legislation through Congress. The Republicans, when they had the House and Senate, but not the presidency, 60 times, 60, passed a bill repealing Obamacare, knowing that it would be vetoed. Now they have control of the House and Senate, and they can't get their act together. Now, the Democrats have party discipline. Recall what happened to Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman a few years ago, who always, he was a Democrat, and he always voted as the Democratic Party wanted, except one time he thought something was not favorable to Israel, and he voted against it. I can't blame the man. I mean, he's a Jew. He would be in favor of Israel. The Democratic Party didn't like that and put up a candidate to oppose him in the primary and overfunded that candidate and kicked Joe Lieberman out of the Senate. You have party discipline. The Democratic members of House and Senate don't dare cross over to the Republican side of an issue, even if they think the Republican side is better. The Republicans don't have party discipline. Witness Senator McCain, Senator Rand Paul, Senator Susan Collins of Maine. You've got senators that are free to vote their conscience. So the Republicans can't get the needed 50 votes to pass a health care bill. And they can't agree among themselves on anything. So I wrote this because it's my first novel. I felt that the impasse is going to take us down the road of a defective healthcare situation getting worse and worse, and in a few years people are going to be dying. We're going to have fewer people entering the medical profession, so there will be a doctor shortage. And of those who do enter, if enrollment is down at medical schools, they'll be letting less qualified applicants in. So that means that of the doctors that come out of medical school, they may not all be as good as they used to be.
Right.
Okay, so I wrote that book with that in mind and took a look at what could happen. And the first character in my book is, and these are fictitious characters, Hugh O'Neill. He has cancer. He's been given just a few weeks to live. He's 75 years old, a retired teacher who taught in Chicago. And if this were 35 years ago, this book is set in the future, you understand. He says, right, if this were 35 years ago, back in 2008, I'd have been completely cured of this cancer that I spotted very, very early. He discovered a tiny little dark spot on his left arm 2 years ago, irregularly shaped and less than an eighth of an inch in diameter. He had heard about melanoma, a particularly the vicious form of skin cancer. Most of them can be cured immediately, but he discovered one that was particularly vicious, and he tried to make an appointment. Well, in the future, you don't call the doctor of your choice. I call it Fair Health Coverage. Fair Health Coverage has an 800 number, and you speak to them in Washington, and they'll set you up with a doctor you've never seen before. Remember, when Obamacare was passed, we were promised that our insurance would go down $2,500 a year. We'd save thousands of dollars on medical care. You could keep your doctor. You could keep your insurance. All of that was a lie, and the person who actually drafted the bill has admitted he lied. Okay, so this fella tries to get an appointment, but he can't go directly to a dermatologist. He must first get an appointment with a general practitioner. That takes him a month. Then he has to get an appointment. Then the general practitioner refers him to a dermatologist. That takes another 2 months. The dermatologist finally diagnoses it and refers him to a cancer specialist, an oncologist. And that takes another month. By that time, he's terminally ill. But he had a skin cancer at an early enough stage. He had a 97% chance of a complete cure. He's really sad. He's depressed. He's wondering what to do with his pet dog who he's had for 10 years. And he's talking about letting one of his relatives care for the pet dog. It's really, really sad. His family comes to visit him, and says to his son, America isn't what it used to be when I was young. If someone offers to pay you $2,500 a month for the rest of your life, and if that same person has the power to determine how long you live, run away as fast as your legs will carry you, is what my character Hugh O'Neill says. Because that's exactly what the federal government is doing. They pay Social Security, and the Social Security system is bankrupt, and Congress raided the lockbox years ago and spent the money that was in it. Now they just print money to pay Social Security, which causes inflation. but the federal government is soon to be the only source for medical care in America, so they determine how long you live.
Right.
And look at that poor kid over in England whose parents are not being allowed to bring him to America for a possibility. It's only a possibility of a cure. They'd rather kill the kid instead, because if he came to America and got cured, God forbid, that would show American medicine is superior to British medicine. They don't want that. The life of the kid. The life of the kid isn't worth that much to them. In any event, we have a cancer specialist, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, brother of the present mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, who was President Obama's first chief of staff. And Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel has written, saying everybody over the age of 75 is unproductive, a useless burden on society, and medical care dollars need to be prioritized to save only productive lives. In other words, let them die.
Wasn't somewhere in American history that the Native Americans, or should I say the early Indians, used to do that with the seniors, or the seniors used to take it on themselves and just walk up into the mountains?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Eskimos in Alaska.
Well, this society is basically pushing that same agenda without saying it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And but in my book, the federal government is now the only insurer. You must call them for a doctor's appointment. You can't call a doctor directly. They choose your doctor. May not be the same doctor you saw last time. So after his family leaves on his visit, Hugh O'Neill thinks, if these nasty people are going to take my life, I need to take one of them out before I go. And Congressman Cisco Trevelyan, that's a fictitious name, helped then-President Hemphill, that's a future president, fictitious, pass fair health coverage. He's a far leftist, doesn't understand the benefits of competition and capitalism. Trevelyan voted 12 times in Congress to raise taxes. Revenues plummeted as he raised taxes because jobs disappeared to other countries. He supported tens of millions of dollars in federal aid to enable Planned Parenthood to perform more late-term abortions. He reinstated what Trump took out so that now a pedophile can invade the girls' toilet room at school. Any male teenager in high school desiring to lust after an undressed girl has a right to claim he might want to become a girl, and as such he can shower with the girls.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. That's where we were headed. Trump took that out. So it's near Christmas time, and our character decides he's going to buy a pizza and deliver it to the congressman's house. He'll probably be home for Christmas. And he runs a check on him through E-Verify, finds out where he lives, and buys a pizza and figures he'll ring the doorbell. Well, he does. But he also mails letters to dozens of news media telling what he's doing and why he's doing it. He succeeds in killing the congressman, but the news media get the letters. He's arrested, of course, for killing the congressman, and he figures, well, that's not so bad. I'm going to die in a couple of weeks anyway. They can't do very much to me. And then the law enforcement calls a meeting and wonders what to do about this, and then they hope this doesn't spawn copycat killings. Well, it does. And I'll give you another character in the book. Just a moment.
Wasn't it a doctor somewhere in Philadelphia just did something like that recently?
I don't know. I didn't hear that. But the next man in the book, speaking in the first person, says, "I'm Denzel Connolly. I'm an African-American, and I live in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm dying of metastasized prostate cancer that should have been caught years ago. I blame fair health coverage for having allowed my cancer to spread until it became incurable. My wife, Keista, similarly died of cancer 5 years ago. I have two children, Travis, age 40, and Mariah, age 38. Both are happily married. And I have a lovely granddaughter, now age 17. And he talks about his family a bit. And he's very dissatisfied. He says, "I'm 69 years old and a retired master electrician. Before I retired, I could either hire illegals or pay Americans a fair wage. I chose to do the latter, which cost me much business. With higher prices than those charged by electricians using illegal labor, I had trouble competing with those companies. My prices couldn't compete with those companies using illegal labor. Some choice, I finally retired. I intend to go by train to visit Washington to meet my congressman, Pierce Gersten," another fictitious name. "He not only refused to repeal fair health coverage, he also voted to tear down the wall that President Trump put up decades ago. He's a congressman who gladly allows millions of illegals and no few thousands of terrorists to flood the countries, taking jobs that African Americans used to hold. Your hotel housekeeper used to be an African American. Now she's a Latino or Middle Easterner who speaks no English, does a job for half the minimum wage, pays no taxes, sends her children to public school at your expense, and uses fair health coverage. So too with gardeners, painters, roofers, and many other jobs formerly held by those African Americans who never received a good enough education. Crime is up, both from illegals and from many of the 20 million African Americans without jobs. It's a shame to see America go down this path. After many years of injustice, Jim Crow was finally ending when I was born in 1979. I myself never experienced any real discrimination. Only about 12% of the United States is black, not enough black votes to carry a national election. President Barack Obama back in 2008 carried states like Maine, New Hampshire, New Mexico, Oregon, Vermont, all with populations of only 1, 2, or 3% black. Race relations have deteriorated. People are making money, and politicians getting elected by pitting whites against blacks, women against men, gays against straights. Gersten claims to be a friend of African Americans. I intend to give him a piece of my mind. I've written him numerous letters. Now I want to tell him in person. Every 4 years, Democrats put a black man on the podium at the Democratic National Convention. He speaks for an hour and receives a standing ovation. And that's the last thing the Democrats do for blacks until the next convention 4 more years down the road. Politicians in Washington on both sides of the aisle want a permanent underclass living on the edge of poverty, a people they can convince that more government is a solution and that they should be grateful to them for everything they have. It should be called the new slavery. Slaves of old were told by their slave masters, you don't know how good you've got it. Free food, free housing, free clothing, free medical care. What more could you want? Now, some slaves might actually have bought this pitch, but I suspect most didn't. I want my freedom is what most slaves thought. Today, the politicians are telling too many blacks essentially the same thing as the slave masters of old. Free food, 70 million are now on food stamps. Now, I'm speaking in projected figures that you understand from the year the book is, not from today. Free housing, just look at the slum housing projects. Free medical care, just experience fair health coverage. The politicians want to keep blacks in poverty so they can pander for the black vote. And the Democrats get their black votes. Segregation began with the Democratic Party after the Civil War, and through the 1960s, phony literacy tests were used to keep blacks from voting. These tests were administered by local county clerks and registrars of voters with absolutely no objective grading standards to govern them. They were free to fail any black, however literate, and to pass any white, however ignorant, and they did so. All elected officials in the South were Democrats, without exception. It was the Republican Party that was formed in 1854 at Ripon, Wisconsin, for the express purpose of ending slavery. Abraham Lincoln, the first Republican president, did just that with his 1862 Emancipation Proclamation. In the Jim Crow years up to and including the late 1960s, not a single senator or congressman from the Jim Crow South was a Republican. Southern Democratic senators in Congress filibustered, saying that all blacks should be sent back to Africa. Such vile rhetoric. And this is my character talking, Denzel Connolly. Such vile rhetoric was being spewed out of Southern Democrat mouths in the Senate as late as the 1970s. Lyndon Baines Johnson was a Democrat senator from Texas. He, too, filibustered against integration. Then he was chosen to be vice president under John Kennedy, a Massachusetts Democrat. When President Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, Johnson became president. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed by Congress with strong Republican support. President Johnson, according to newspapers of the day, considered vetoing it. But since he was running for a second term in the White House with an election just 4 months away, he knew he would need Northern support, so he reluctantly signed the bill. Revisionist historians now revise history by crediting the segregationist with passage of the bill. The character continues, I am black. I was proud to be a member of the same political party to which the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King belonged, the Republican Party. I stayed with the Republican Party until the party's demise years ago for failure to consistently stand for anything and for caving into their opposition nearly 100% of the time, even when Republicans had the majority of both houses. Republicans, it seems, were like the Washington Generals basketball team, always playing against the Harlem Globetrotters and always losing. 13,000 exhibition games over many years, and the Washington Generals lost every one. They knew that was their job. Why do so many politicians try to pit blacks against whites and whites against blacks? They want to keep us poor, so we feel grateful to them. Speaking of
divide and conquer.
Absolutely.
They want to keep
Denzel Connolly says they want to keep us poor, so we'll feel grateful to them for every scrap they throw down to us from the table. Speaking of tables, I like to compare a nation's economy to a big banquet table to which everyone brings what he or she produces and from which everyone takes. If everyone is producing, the table is piled high. Just about everything on the table will, in the end, get consumed. In a capitalist society, people will take unequal portions from the table, usually in approximation to how much they produced and brought to the table. In a socialist or communist country, everyone gets an equal portion of what others have produced, since no one can reap the fruits of his or her own labor, far less is produced and brought to the table. It ends up being an equal share of a much smaller pie. All right, Connolly says, I will soon die. The question is whether I can do any good on my way out. Then he decides he is going to take out Congressman Gersten. And he does so, and sends out letters to the news media, and this is becoming, now at this point, the president is calling an Oval Office meeting of concerned agencies, including the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI, and so forth, and figuring out what to do to stop this. But it takes off. In fact, at one point in the book, the president of the United States, future president of the United States, says if one out of 500 terminally ill persons decides to take out a congressman, that'll be enough every year to take out Congress two times over, every member. In 3 years, it'd be enough to take him out six times. The president is wondering what to do about it. There is a solution. I'm going to save the solution for those who want to read the book. The book's title is Dying to Save America. It is not an expensive book. It is very inexpensive. and it's available at Amazon.com. Now, if you have any questions for me, I've been talking long enough.
Yeah, well, I want to know, in your opinion, I mean, what do you think Congress is going to do with health care now?
I give it 80% chance nothing will be done, and the 20% chance that something will be done is it will be ineffective and cosmetic only.
Let me see, Kyle, explain that.
By that, I mean they're not going to do much changing of Obamacare. The liberals won't allow it. The conservatives will object. But if the president can whip them all in line and get enough on board to pass something, it's going to be watered down. It's got to
okay.
be, because if it did anything significant, you'd either have the conservatives opposing it, like Rand Paul, Senator Cruz, Senator Lee of Utah. If it did anything current conservative, you'd have them supporting it, and the liberal senators opposing it, including McCain, Susan Collins, and others. And if it were liberal, you'd have the conservative senators opposing it. And with 52 members of the Senate, the Republican Party can only choose to lose two votes, and they don't have the party discipline the Democrats have to whip members in line.
I know the health care is a very big issue, and I've been seeing it a lot myself, just the way that the hospitals and work, because I come from the era where we knew our doctors personally because they came to our home, you know,
sure.
our family doctors. So we had a personal relationship with them for years, and like you were speaking earlier, now you will get a doctor, but you probably never see this guy again. He knows nothing about what he reads in your chart, and hopefully your chart's been updated regularly. So it's a concern. I know a lot more for seniors now. They don't know, you know, really which way to go, and veterans as well.
I know.
I don't know. What would be the fix for this? I know they keep putting Band-Aids on something. So in your opinion, what would be the fix for this?
Well, I don't want to give away the fix. It's in the book. And it's a good fix.
Well,
and
hey, listen,
work.
You know what? Even if you did, Mitchell, even if you did, you know, I'm just, I don't know, I'm kind of upset with our country right about now. Even if you did, a lot of people would accept it, you know, because you hear people talk about the time you can't handle the truth, and I kind of feel that a lot. You know, you tell people the truth and you're honest with them the first time, and then they look at you crazy, and then you fabricate some stuff, and then they say, oh, yeah, I could believe that.
Yeah. I know.
So,
I know.
It's just sad, but that's the case.
It is sad. They're going to be pushing assisted suicide. I can hear that coming.
Well, either that or to do what you said when there's people that could have been cured early on when they seen signs, but because of the way that the system is set up, you got to go for this checkup, and they got to look at this, and then you got to come back 3 weeks later, and they look at that, and you come back a month and a half later to see somebody else, and by then you have a major issue.
Yeah.
So if you terminal, like you mentioned, I mean, look, you're dying anyway, so why not take out the person that caused you to die? They could have did something about it. I mean, maybe I shouldn't say that.
Well, I don't advocate people doing that. I want to make that very clear.
Of course not. Of course not.
But that could be in the future. That could easily happen if this thing gets as bad as it could get.
Right. Yeah.
And,
well, it's really no reason for it, and you look at society, you know, it seems like the priorities are all in the wrong places.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's not in to help the fellow man, it's to have a shinier car, you know.
I know. That's wrong. We're turning away from God. That's wrong.
Yes. So my other question would be, well, how do you think this is going to affect people with low income? But I think the low-income families, but I think that's kind of obvious.
Yeah, well, obviously. It's going to be bad for people with low income. We need to have a lot of private insurance out there and give people working the option or indeed require people who are working to get private insurance and require employers to offer it. And then we need to make it of young people were hit by Obamacare.
Right. Hey, Mitchell, I don't want to cut you off, but I want to ask you a question right there because you just brought up something that beamed out. Do you feel that insurance companies should be allowed to search national records on someone before deciding whether to insure them or not?
I don't know. I don't have a clear opinion on that. Certainly, you can't wait until your house is on fire to call your friendly Allstate agent and buy fire insurance.
Right.
And there are problems with pre-existing conditions. People with pre-existing conditions need coverage. But they should be getting it all along. And if they're unable to work, unable to get a job, they should be able to get some kind of government-supported insurance. I would agree with that. If they're able to get a job, they should get a job and should get insurance through their employer, which puts them into a pool regardless of what risks they have.
So that's like almost each case would be, I guess, looked at individually.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to do what's fair for people, and requiring people to show up at the emergency room for sore throats is not the right thing either. There has to be something out there. And on the other hand, anybody that should be able to get private insurance should get private insurance. And this idea of forcing young people to pay several thousand a year for insurance is ridiculous. It's absurd. Most young people are healthy. Most young people go to the doctor once or twice a year for an annual checkup and maybe for bronchitis. And that's it. And that costs them $100 a visit, let's say. That's $200, not $3,000. And all that the young, healthy person needs is catastrophic coverage, major medical coverage, that kicks in if you get a serious injury. You break a leg in an accident, you come down with a serious illness.
When you say young people, Mitchell, what age are you talking about, age demographics about?
Oh, I guess I'm talking up through 30, 35. Depends on the health of the individual.
Oh, okay.
Most young people don't need insurance that covers every doctor visit that they're not going to make.
Right. The reason I ask that because a lot of young people don't even think the necessity of having insurance to a certain age. So,
they should have catastrophic coverage.
Yeah, I mean, but most young people do. They think they're going to live forever. You know, they don't think about insurance till they get to a certain age, a certain maturity level, should I say.
Well, they need to.
True.
I don't know that I want to force people to get insurance. I want to make it as attractive as possible, as easy as possible, and encourage people to get insurance. But I don't believe government should be forcing people to do everything the government feels is best for them. They should be able to make up their own mind and make their own decision. We're a free country.
I agree.
If I want to,
I want to smoke cigarettes,
which I don't, I should be free to do so. I shouldn't be free to blow smoke in your face, but I should be free to do so. Not the wisest decision necessarily, but on the other hand, if I decided to go parachute jumping, nobody'd bat an eye.
No, I guess not, as long as you don't fall on somebody.
Yep.
I don't seem like for every bill, for every idea, every thought to help somebody, somebody can come up with an opposing idea or a reason why it shouldn't happen.
Oh, I know. Well, yeah, but that should be a part of the democratic process, and Congress should work those things out. Instead of being so polarized that no Democrat who feels the Republicans have a good answer should be is free to come over and vote for the Republicans. And I would be much happier if a bill came through that Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky would say, well, this is not my idea of an ideal bill, and much needs to be done to improve it, but it's a step in the right direction. And even though it isn't what I would approve of entirely, I'm going to vote for it to support my colleagues. And Senator McCain of Arizona, or Collins of Maine, or Cassidy of Louisiana, on the other side of the issue would say, this isn't what I want, but it's close, and the vast majority of Republicans support it, so I'm going to vote for it even though I feel we need to do more work. Get it passed.
That's true. Get it passed.
But don't hold your breath. But if you want an interesting and fun read, get my book, Dying to Save America, available at Amazon.com.
Yes. I know I'm going to have to read it. I know Olivia had the opportunity to read it, and she shared some of it with me, so I'm looking forward to reading it myself. So I definitely advise our listeners to go out and read it, because you're definitely talking about something that affects and applies to us all in the future as well as today.
Absolutely. Oh, it's major importance.
Now, I guess the reason I asked you about the age demographics, because I know I've been in the entertainment industry pretty much all my life, and I know a lot of fellow entertainers. We were so busy enjoying our lifestyle, we really didn't think about tomorrow too much. And, you know, you have a tendency to run through a tremendous amount of money, and all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're a certain age and you start thinking about, life insurance, medical insurance, and all these other things.
Sure. It should be easily available, and obviously, with the right kind of government, most people would be working. We've lost 70,000 companies to other countries because we have the highest corporate income tax of any country in the world. And to bring those companies back and give jobs to lots and lots and lots of people will help the situation. It'll help revenues, too. Even if you get less money from the companies, if they put people to work, those people are going to be paying taxes and be off the food stamp rolls, and we're going to have more revenue. Wonder if Congress can do that one. It seems simple to me, but nothing seems simple in Washington.
No. They have hard problems, trying to feed the homeless, let alone trying to provide medical attention for the homeless or the low-income people.
I know. It's terrible.
And it's sad, and, you know, just about every city and every state you go through, you can find some part of that city where there's a lot of homeless people, and you can't help to wonder, first, how did they get there? And second, the medical condition, or is there something in place?
Oh, God, yeah.
To help them.
Oh, yeah. You ever visited Seattle?
Yes, I have.
It's depressing. It's where the word Skid Row comes from. It's from back in the early days of Seattle. They went up into the hills and cut logs and skidded them down a road, which was called Skid Road. And at the bottom of that road, there was and still is a collection of homeless people, and it probably runs into the tens of thousands today.
Wow.
It's unfortunate. And we need to give people good education so they can get good jobs. We need to have good jobs available. If you have enough good jobs available, the companies will educate people. Because they need people.
That means we have to stop outsourcing all our jobs, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Made in China is killing us. And if we were to go to war, God forbid we should go to war with China, where are we going to get the supplies to fight China? Now stop and think about that. Who makes all the hard hats that could make helmets? Who makes all the shoes? There's maybe one shoe company in the United States and a small one at that.
Yeah, I think about that.
Do we contact our opponents and say we need to buy 100,000 infantry boots?
What about the companies that manufacture all the electronics?
Yeah, they're all over there. Find something made in America. You can't. We need to bring that back.
Yes, we
definitely
do.
Need to bring that back.
Do you see that happening under this administration?
I think this administration has so many problems with an opposition that won't behave like a normal opposition. The normal opposition disagrees with the president but doesn't pull all the shenanigans they're pulling. This Russian stuff is a bunch of nonsense. First of all, there's no law against a candidate listening to what another country has to say. And President Obama spent $300,000 a year money and my money sending people over to Israel to try to defeat Benjamin Netanyahu. That's okay. But it's fairly clear the Russians didn't hack into any voting machines. And to the degree that they provide information to a candidate, that's perfectly legal. So why all the hullabaloo? They're just making a lot of hullabaloo, slowing the president down in doing what he was elected to do. For Pete's sake, give him a chance. If you agree with him or don't agree with him, at least give him a chance. I wasn't out yelling, impeach Obama. I didn't approve of many of his policies. I thought it was good that we had an African-American president, although I can think of a couple other people. In fact, 30 years ago, I think it was about 30 years ago, man, it might have been 25 years ago, I wrote General Colin Powell a letter begging him to run for president, saying he could win and he could put an end to racial problems in America. I didn't expect to get a reply from him. And I did expect if I got a reply, it'd be a little note from the secretary saying, General Powell, thank you for your letter. No, he took out two pieces of his own letterhead and his fountain pen and wrote me a two-page letter.
Wow.
Yeah, I still have it. I mean, I treasure that. That would be my choice of an African-American president, or Condoleezza Rice. It's time we had an African-American president, but the one we got, unfortunately, is a bit too far to the left for my tastes.
Well, I don't know, because I'm an African-American male, and I guess my opinion would go both ways on different, I guess, subjects.
Sure.
I think a lot of people expected more of President Obama, but I personally think it would take him another 8 years, because when you inherit a whole bunch of problems, you know, and the majority of time is spent dealing with those, you have very little time to even implement your program, let alone move forward with it.
I agree.
It's not like he entered the game, you know, with the score being even. So I guess that would be
that's legitimate.
My holdout on all that, you know, if we're gonna be fair.
Sure.
Let's be fair, because I've heard a lot of black people, African American, have said to me, "Well, you guys had a black president, and he didn't do nothing for you," you know. And kind of personally, I could have kind of took a little offense to that, because I'm like, okay, well, if the game is already tilted, if the game is already crooked, how do you expect it to end up?
Yeah, I agree with that.
So. I just took that and like, okay, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, just like everybody, you know, got one of those other things that they have, you know. So
sure.
I don't know. If it's up to me, I'd have an island yesterday, and I'd go somewhere and I'd starve my sharks and wouldn't let nobody come visit, because I don't have a lot of respect. I don't have too much respect for any of our politicians today.
I agree.
You know, they don't speak, you know, with iron in their words, like the Indians used to say. They all speak with a forked tongue. And
we need term limits, but Congress isn't about to propose it would take a constitutional amendment, and Congress isn't about to propose a constitutional amendment calling for term limits.
And one thing, Mitchell, even if you're not religious, it's causing all of us to be spiritual, because every day that we wake up and go outside and we do see another day, it's almost a blessing, because you don't know which fool going to push a button.
I agree. Kim Jong-un.
Exactly. Yeah,
oh,
you know,
that guy's
it,
dangerous.
Oh, shoot. Yes, it's scary. It really is. It is scary, and we have no say-so, no control. And I remember when I was a little boy in Texas, we had a cellar, you know, a storm cellar.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if they would do any good today.
Probably not. Oh.
Oh, shoot.
Terrible times we live in.
I know. Boy, but look, if you have a God, whoever our listeners are, wherever you may be, I guess now's the time to get in touch with him. And if he don't know you by first name, you better introduce yourself.
Amen. Amen. Absolutely. Amen. Oh, I'm missing an evening service to do this program.
Well, I appreciate it, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going to get something positive run away with this, because they definitely need to know this, and I'm sure it'll help you definitely your book sales and help your message get out, because you got some
positive. Dying to Save America on Amazon.com.
Yes, yes. So what else do you have in store? What else do you have coming up next?
Nothing. I don't have anything clearly planned beyond this. Something will come up, of course.
Oh, okay. Because it seemed like this book would create a whole bunch of questions that would require answers.
I'm sure, and when those questions emerge, I'll be prepared to deal with it. Right now, I just want to get the book out there. It's an important book.
And I just want to take this time to also say, for those who just joined us or joined us late, you definitely can hear the show in its entirety from wherever you get your podcasts from. It'll be available in a few moments for iTunes, and you can definitely go to worldmovement.com and get it. You can get it at Spotify, or you could just Google "Can a Player Play," and the show will come up, and you can hear everything that we've discussed in its entirety about Mr. Froshan's book, Dying to Save America, and you can hear what we've talked about is in regards to our current health care situation, and
it's
dire
need. It's a pleasure talking. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you too, and I definitely want to thank you again for coming to join us and wishing you great success on the book. And I'm sure you're going to have it because you're talking about something that's very, very relative today. And I don't think if people don't tune in today, they're going to wake up one day and be in a world of trouble.
No kidding. That's where we're headed.
Definitely.
That's where we're headed.
So, again, I want to thank you so very much for joining us today. And we're going to post this momentarily, and it'll be available worldwide for everyone to see. And please share the show with your friends also.
And I thank you.
Okay, thank you too. And have a blessed day and a great, great rest of the weekend.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Mr. Mitchell Froshan, and we was talking about Dying to Save America and the current situation in America with our health, our doctors and the medical profession, and what we need to do to, not save ourselves and look out for ourselves in the very, very, very dire, dire future. So if you joined us late, please go back and listen to the show from the beginning and hope you can take away something very positive to help you. And again, we thank you for joining us today, and we'll be back next week at the same time, 2:30 PST. And it was brought to you, of course, by the good people at worldmovement.com. And so, hey, we're going to put this one on you right now, Sonny, so let me put this one in your ear.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the water. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was the light.
In Genesis, word was born, and out of nothing, yet from beyond, He spoke, and the earth was formed. Then let it be, and there was light. Separated things from the night, and it was good in the sight. The universe was created, time and space separated. Life of Him originated in the air, on sea, on land. In His image He created man. All power is in His hand.
Righteous and holy, so awesome is thy glory. No man. Say yes, I say you're the one I want to sit with, because I know you won't praise the Lord. I don't want to sit with no dude who gets choosy, who feels like I don't need to lift him up, because I already know. Well, why you sitting there like you're dead or something? You got your brains on too. You ought to be bumping, jumping, shouting and running on your feet for the second time. Man, miss me with that attitude, son. You want me to be cool, but I ain't, because I can't. Because if you only know what he's done for me, the things I used to be, how I used to be. I got to testify, I was blind. He opened up my eyes. I know you sanctified now, but there was a time. If it hadn't been for God, you'd have lost your mind. Get with this, I don't miss or resist this. The Lord is not slack concerning his promises. I feel a shout coming on by now. Y'all pray for me, cause it's finna get loud. Microphone on, y'all still sitting down like something's wrong. If the Lord brought you through another day, come on, clap your hands and give God the praise. I know you don't mind praising when the going's good. You want to show him love and how well you should. But can you still praise him through the pains and hurts? Oh yeah, now we have a church. When money's low, work is slow, won't nothing grow. You're feeling low, that's when it's time to let the devil know. He has to go, you ain't taking no money. And after having done all you can to stand, throw your hands back, lift up your hands. Begin to think the love of what he's already done. Count your blessings out loud, one by one.
Let me tell you something.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't get any other taste this year,
oh, yeah.
By moving us,
oh, yeah.
Into a new level,
oh, yeah.
I'm ready to shout now because I already know what I'm going to say.
Enemy on your case, quote a verse, don't curse. You're going into battle, better send Judah first. Because the war is in the spirit, demons feared when they hear. Put the devil in check, he won't come here. Unbelievers, they know him. They say you'll be faking, praying them and laughing. They be praise, I hate you. But just because I'm humble, don't. When I'm praising my God, you best back off, cause I'm a child. So tell them what they do, they're coming wrong. I got the bread for you, that's why I think you out loud for my daily bread. Cause I'm not a closed mouth, don't get sad. So don't better get upset, it's just me and the boys. With no regret, don't give a heck, making a joyful noise. Taking a praise to another level, and ain't nobody mad but the devil.
I feel the spirit of God here.
Yeah, old school. That's what I'm talking about. Listen, this ain't for everybody. Some of y'all need to hear this. I know you're in the trenches fighting, but check it out. I'm going to put it down like this so I can help the saints understand. Everything you're going through is all part of the master plan. Or what? You thought because you got saved, everything was going to be peaches and cream? You better wake up, son. Don't nothing come to a sleeper but a dream. Faith without works is dead. Read your Bible. You know what it says. He who don't work, don't eat. Slackers don't get fed. Yeah. Jesus said, he who puts his hand to the plow looks back the same ain't fit. Some of y'all ain't been in the trenches 5 minutes and you're about ready to quit. I ain't mad at ya, I'm just hitting you with the real. If you died for me and I was still tripping, now how you think that make you feel? Check this out, deep game, this here's deep, huh? Some of y'all ain't sawing nothing but you started trying to reach, huh? But after him who's able to possess your fathers by his glory, struggles might be part of your testimony, but it ain't the end of the story. Now the point is since it was prophesied way back in the day. Choir, sing your hook right here and see if the church can relate. Fiery trials were to try you. You say, why you? But your shirt say, what would Jesus do? Why you asking if he ain't trying to do what he's saying? Huh? He told you he was going to have tribulations, but you thought he was playing. Huh? 1 minute you tell him how good God is and can't nobody beat the talk. The next minute you backfight so fast, look like you're moonwalking. Huh? Oh yeah, I'm preaching to myself because I ain't no better. It ain't like I've been following his every word, obeying it to the letter. But we soldiers, we got to remember that. Regroup, stay on point. Huh? Yeah, bow down, confess, repent, stay humble, let him anoint. Huh? It ain't easy as I thought it was. I'd be lying if I told you that. But it's showing up getting better all the time. Trust me, that's the fact. Ain't nothing we going through that can't be handled. God put that on his son. Like they say, you can shout now if you want to, because the battle's already won. So while you're going through the valley, don't even trip. You're going to be on top. Choir, send the hook line one more game. This time you don't stop.
Can, if you let him, I know good and well he can work it out.